Hey everybody, welcome to this week's Q&R. Today I have the privilege of sitting with Adam, Pastor Adam, and Wendell Van Valen. Today we are super excited. Adam and I just rushed in because the Foundry had some exciting news today. They are now a five-star level all-star in childhood education. Is that how you say it?
Yeah,
is
so
that a good way?
Preschool and for after school.
Yes, the only one in Warren County. So we need to give a shout out to the Foundry. We're super excited
for them.
And for those kiddos. Also, this afternoon, if you are available or around the West End about 4 o'clock, we will be celebrating with Prince of Peace as they are having their ribbon cutting with the Chamber of Commerce. So that's happening at 480 Beauty Court. It's either 480 or 430.
No, 480.
Right. Okay,
yeah.
There you
yeah.
go.
Good
yes.
job. Pull it out of your head.
That is exactly right. That's what I do here, y'all.
Pull it out of your head. So the T-shirt shop in partnership with the Housing Authority, mm-hmm. and that's grand opening at the Chambers today. It's pretty great.
Lots of fun stuff happening today.
Community partnerships.
Yeah. Lots of fun stuff happening today. I'm so glad that you are here. If you are here, please let Pastor Lou know he's in the comments with us. As you can see, we can't see what you're writing, but let him know that you're here. If you have questions, you can type those out, and he'll chat with you if you want us to talk about it next week or the week after, because next week's going to be a little wonky. We will do that as well. This summer, we sort of set this up like 2 weeks ago, where we will be doing something different on Q&R. We'll still answer questions and go through things if you send those in, but if not, we're going to talk about sort of the rehash of the sermon, maybe go a little bit deeper. Last week, we had Gideon. Wendell, you preached at Greenwood, and Adam, you were here. And so can you all just sort of set us up and share a little bit about Gideon with us today?
This is great because we have to remember the sermon for a few days after, too, which is probably good for all of us. So.
Yeah.
So the Gideon story is in the book of Judges, and so the context is that they've come out of the promised land. They've kind of, you know, generations have kind of have settled. There's not a lot of order, not a lot of structure. Like all the tribes are kind of dispersed and kind of loose family, clannish kind of stuff. And that the pattern of Judges is that it goes well for a while, then they drift from God, and it doesn't go well, the people cry out. God raises up a leader who's, you know, this is the judge, and the judge brings them back to God, and then it goes well for a while, and then the cycle continues, which is a pattern that we probably all recognize in our own lives. So
And the judges aren't ever as authoritative as Moses was,
right,
or as Joshua was. So it's almost more localized, mm-hmm. instead of the whole big. So it's a little wonky. They don't have Samuel yet. They don't have David. They don't have...
Right. This is before the monarchy and the high point of that, which being David and Solomon, which we're getting ready to talk about. We're doing a sermon on each of those. But so Moses and Joshua come up because Egypt is sort of their frame of reference. And we didn't get into that too much in the sermon. It's a kind of interesting point, isn't it?
That comes up in the story.
It comes up in the story. Yeah. They bring Egypt up, and there's a reason, right? Because...
Yeah. It, the obvious thing is the Midianites have these hordes of people. And it's weird in the story. They keep talking about how many camels they have. It's like... Okay, they have a lot of camels.
They got a lot of camels.
They ran out of parking spaces. So,
and hay.
Yeah. Well,
or whatever camels.
And they're and the whole bunch of them are ravenous.
Right.
They're just ravenous. There's no food left in the country, and so the Israelites are trying to scratch out a living. They're hiding and everything. And Gideon finds himself in the middle of nowhere, threshing wheat in a wine press, which is, I don't know what you did in your studies, but I mean. A threshing floor is where their wind can go through and get the chaff away, so it's visible. The wine press is more hidden,
contained. It doesn't make any sense except that it's just that pathetic.
Yeah, they're hiding. Right. Yeah.
So they kind of feel like it's sort of like back to Egypt. It's sort of like that when they're enslaved and they're made to make bricks without straw, right? I mean, they're like, once again, they find themselves, it's supposed to be the land of milk and honey, and some other force, more powerful nation, has got them sort of confined again.
Yeah, so much for the promised land.
Right, so much for the promised land.
Yeah.
And so much for the God who brought them there, or should be doing something about it.
Yeah. So, when the angel shows up and catches Gideon threshing wheat in the wine press, he addresses him as mighty warrior. And Gideon is like, no. I'm the least of the least of the least. He names his tribe and his clan, and he says, I'm the bottom of that clan.
Right. It's sort of like what, you know, in recovery, like, or when in discipleship or life in general, like God meeting us at the bottom of the barrel, right? Like, is it, you know, you,
yeah, sometimes you gotta hit your bottom.
You have to hit your the bottom point, right?
Yeah.
And then God finds you there. So that's Gideon is representative of that for the whole people of God, right?
Yeah.
At the bottom of the bottom of the bottom.
And then the angel reminds him of Egypt and all. And Gideon's like, yeah, we know all about that.
Right.
We know all about Egypt. What's with that? Because back then, God was real chatty. He had a lot to say through that guy named Moses. The plagues.
Oh, chatty.
Yeah, chatty God.
He had a lot to say.
Yeah. And look at all the plagues that happened. I mean, it couldn't be more obvious. The Nile's running nice and clear. Oh, now it's blood.
You see it.
Yeah, you see it. And then post-Egypt, instantly, they're out in the wilderness. Where's God? Well, just open the tent flap. Mm-hmm. Pillar of smoke, pillar of fire.
Right.
And then there's the manna thing every day.
A daily reminder.
Yeah, yeah. And so they always had food, and we're starving.
Right.
They had a God who talked. We don't hear anything.
Right.
They had a God who showed up. We don't see anything. And so the assumption was that if you don't repeat what you did back then.
God.
Yeah.
If you don't do what you did then.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Then you don't care or.
You've abandoned us,
yeah.
as Gideon says.
Yeah, yeah. And that word I think is important, the abandonment.
Right.
In further on in the story, I think.
I wonder, I mean, it's sort of this tension, again, back to the book of Judges, like in Egypt and coming out of Egypt, you know, as we told that story earlier in the year, I mean, there's a lot of unknown, there's a lot of uncertainty. It really is a time of struggle. And that's where God seems most clear. And then Gideon, I mean, technically, they are in a place of prosperity. Things are going well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they can't see God.
Right.
Which is sort of like a human thing, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
We don't feel, you know, like things are going well and we start to drift, right?
Yeah. Well, then of course, he's skeptical that the angel is from God at first. But then the more he talks, the more they establish that he is of God. And so then Gideon, was there something else that happened in there? Help me if there was.
Well, like the offering. So he makes the offering.
So then he tells the angel, would you sit here and wait?
Yeah. Are you going to be here when I get back?
Because our God's not here.
Right.
So since you're a God rep, will you be here when I get... I'm going to go make a meal. When I come back. And lo and behold, he was there.
He was, right.
Which is... kind of leapfrogs up to the fleece part where Gideon said, I'm going to leave this fleece out here, God. Now he's talking to God, right?
Not
the angel.
He's talking to God, not the angel, yeah.
And he says to God, you know, I'm going to leave this out and I'm going to go to bed.
Right.
Are you going to show evidence that you were here while I was gone?
And twice he tests God.
Yeah.
On whether God is going to be faithful.
Yeah.
Which I said in my version of the sermon at Melrose, like that... We like to think of these stories, and again, we've kind of been doing this series as like, this is not a Sunday school story. It's not a story that's bad for children. It just wasn't written for children.
No,
right?
Yeah,
it was written for adults.
Yeah.
Right? But we've made them sort of moralistic, and like, if somebody in the Bible does it, that's what we should do. And that's not the whole. That's mm-hmm. not the point at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these are stories about people who encounter God, and so they got some of it right and some of it wrong. And we can talk about that. We can wrestle through. So putting out the fleece, testing God, is not really something that we want. It's a sign of Gideon's lack of trust,
well,
or in his struggle to really believe God.
Yeah, but there was a similarity between all three,
right?
And that is, will you be here when I get back?
Right.
Which
all
which,
three meaning the
abandonment,
when he makes the offering,
yeah,
and then when
the two fleeces. It's real obvious that Israel has severe abandonment issues. There's no pillars of smoke and fire. There's no manna. There's no plagues.
Mm-hmm.
What's with this? Mm-hmm. We feel abandoned. And so God said, well, he dealt with that. Instead of saying, you don't test me like this, he dealt with
mm-hmm.
it. But like you say, we've turned it into, well, if you got a question for God, that's the way you do it. You do the fleece thing.
You test it in some way and look for a sign.
Yeah.
I think a lot of times we're looking for a sign.
Yeah.
Because we want clarity, we want assurance, and we're trying to get God to do something so that we feel better. And I think over and over and over in the Bible, that really doesn't work. It's not the thing that gets us to assurance. It's not the thing that helps us live boldly or be mighty warrior, as in this case. But God is faithful. God is patient. God, as you said, kind of jumps through Gideon's hoops, which is incarnational. God's willing to somehow come down to our level, put up with our weaknesses, or appreciate our humanness.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's symbolic that the angel showed up at the wine press.
Right.
He didn't wait till Gideon came out. He went into the dark place.
Right.
But then what happened? So, then the angel, after he nuked the meal some way. I forget exactly.
Right. Fire comes up out of the offering, you know. Yeah. Fire comes up out of the rock and consumes it.
Okay. Yeah. It's one of those God
nuke it. Yeah. I'm like, and that's when the point where I said Gideon goes, okay, maybe there's something to this.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Okay.
Okay. I'm gonna take the next step.
So then the angel says, okay, let's start with baby steps, and he says, start with your dad's backyard. He's got a idol to Baal, and he's got one of those Asherah poles. Get rid of them.
Right.
Which would have tested. It would have tested. Now it's Gideon's turn to be tested. Am I that warrior? Even in a little way.
In a little bit, yeah.
So he kind of gave him a trial run.
Right.
And I
it's not
think,
taking on a full army, but it is taking on something pretty bold.
Well, the rest of the story indicates there was a little price to pay. I mean, they came hunting for who did this.
Who did that?
And Gideon's dad said, well, my son did. Well, we're going to go get him. And then Gideon's dad said, well, let Baal fight his own fights.
Right. And isn't that, back to the what we can see and what we can't see, isn't that a pattern, especially with idolatry in the Bible? Like, I think it's hard for us to think, like, okay, we're going to worship an idol or something made out of, you know, a cow or something like that. But I think we do relate to, like, needing something tangible, wanting to be able to see. And maybe they felt like they had that in Egypt, that, you know, they saw things happening. And then in the Promised Land, in the time of prosperity, not so much. And then when things come that look like signs that it's not going well at all, like the Midians coming in, we make that this huge problem. Like, this is the thing that is bigger than the God that we can't see. Where is God? And what, you know, why, if what Gideon says is, if God is with us, is what the angel said, the Lord is with you. He's like, well, God, pardon me, sir.
Yeah.
Pardon me. So polite. If God is with us, then why has this bad stuff happened to us?
Yeah.
And like, so this thing, whatever it is, and we all have this negativity bias. I mean, there's stuff to be concerned about in the world, but we get worked up about pretty much anything. If we don't have it, a lot of times we'll go looking for it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's just how our brains are wired, to kind of find the thing that is
going wrong. Well, I mean, you said while we were eating our sandwiches a few minutes ago, you said, you know, we'll get on this news stream and watch it 24/7.
Like on, 24-hour news television.
Yeah.
And which is always saying, like, breaking news, da da da, and they're like, so no wonder people are so anxious and so kind of almost at each other, so fearful. We let all that into our heads, and we're kind of drawn to it like a drug almost. And it gives us a sense. It's like this morbid sense of control over our, like, well, we know what the thing we need to fear, and we know. And that's just being spoon-fed to us by the different media.
Force-fed. Yeah. But in
There's always going to be a problem.
Yeah.
So it's easy to look back, you know, on a Bible story and say, okay, the Midianites eating up all the food.
That's the problem.
That's the problem.
But it really wasn't
the problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's easy to look at our world, and every, you know, like, I heard a story on this, like, what part of what fuels the media thing is that these people make a living on finding the thing that, you know, like, that
sure.
sells newspapers.
Sure.
But actually, we're funding those, a lot of those media outlets less. So what they do is, like, it's like a feeding frenzy, like, with fish. Like, some one little thing drops out here, and everybody rushes to it, and it's like, whoom, for a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
2 or 3 or 4 weeks.
Until it runs out of its Yeah.
And then we're looking for the next one. Boom. And then boom. And so, like, pick an issue and watch it. Like, this will be the thing that everybody's talking about for a certain amount of time.
Right, right.
And then 6 months from now, we'll be like, what was that? Because nobody's going, you know, it's hard to go back and follow up on stuff. And
right,
so we're
right,
just so
right.
crazed over that stuff. And so then even more so, partly because of the dynamics of the media industry, like up and down, up and down, up and down. And we're just riding that roller coaster.
Yeah.
When, back to the Gideon story, we said in the sermon, the problem, whatever, you know, that is, is not actually the problem.
Right, right. And God really tips his hand on this, and that when Gideon starts to form his army, God says, this is not a heavy artillery issue. This is a flashwater issue.
Yeah, I love that. A flashwater issue. Like,
yeah, you got what? If you're scared, go home.
Yeah, we don't.
You know?
Right.
So I got rid of a whole bunch. What did he start out with? 32,000, something like that.
Yeah, like in like 20 some. I don't remember the number. Like thousands.
Okay, so
of
there they go.
Home.
Yeah. And then he says, well, still got too many. So it takes them down to the river to drink. When they drank a certain way, okay, keep those. Wind up with 300. Don't take spears. Don't take swords.
Right.
Don't take hand grenades or bazookas.
Right.
You know?
Like I said, just, like, this is not God getting to the special ops forces.
No,
you know, that's not what's going on here.
Yeah.
It's like God winnowing this down so it's almost ridiculous. And he uses these ridiculous means, like tactics to, like, just win by smoke and mirrors and confusion. Among the Midianites.
So they
go to surround the camp at night. I mean, it's almost like a comedy, right?
Let's just make noise.
Yeah, they're making noise.
Flick your Bic lighter, blow your saxophone, watch what happens.
Yeah, break a clay pot.
Yeah, But the really, I mean, what I think we both took the same tack at both places. But the real issue was they forgot who God was.
Right.
That was the problem.
Right.
The problem was not the Midianites, it's they forgot. And they said if God doesn't replicate what he did in Egypt, that means he's not here and he doesn't care.
Right. Right.
And how often do we do that?
Right.
You know,
right.
My grandma taught me this. Brother so-and-so taught me this. So-and-so taught me. And this is the way God is supposed to show up.
Like, it's all so often about control. We want to control the outcomes of our lives. And we want to make bad things stop happening.
Yeah.
And so that we so almost subconsciously enter into faith or a relationship with God, kind of, you know, sort of maybe a little reluctantly or a little trepidatiously, whatever the word is. But the idea is, like, maybe this will allow me to have a little more control over the bad things.
Right.
I'll do this. God will do this. It's like a formula. This, my faithfulness plus God equals getting what I want.
And
what I mean, that's not even selfish stuff. Like, I want the Midianites to stop eating all our food and keeping us. I want the world to be a better place.
Yeah.
And then so we look at the equation and we're like, okay, well, what's not working? Is it me? Am I not? So a lot of religion is about, like, well, you're just getting it wrong.
Right, right, right. Right.
Or is it, as Gideon says, God?
Yeah.
So God's the bad part of this equation that isn't working.
Yeah, yeah.
Where instead, that was never the equation to begin with. That's just not how it works.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and then the last thing that we said, I think you said the same thing, is that when we forget who God is, then we forget who we are.
Right.
And so all Gideon could do was see himself in the light of the of the Midianites. He no longer saw himself as a mighty warrior, a child of God. He saw himself as a victim threshing wheat in a wine press with the Midianites right around the corner.
Right, right.
And that his whole view of himself changed. So as the story progressed, he rediscovered who God was, and he discovered who he was.
Right.
And the whole time, his reputation was growing in the Midianite camp.
Right.
So that he goes down and eavesdrops. They're like, yeah, we saw this giant loaf of bread, which is so intimidating. It's really, really killer bread. This giant loaf of bread coming into camp, and it's got Gideon's name on it.
Yeah.
You know, Gideon the warrior. And so...
So their very fear is the thing that ends up being their undoing.
And so God already knew of that. Y'all make some noise. That's all you need
to do. That's all you're going
to
need to do.
Because they're already scared to death. They'll start turning the sword. But I think what's cool is at the end of the story, which I didn't bring out too much, was there was a proper battle.
There was, yeah.
Gideon and his guys.
I did talk about that.
They picked up swords and spears.
In fact, like some four of the tribes joined them and came out of the caves.
Right.
So like Gideon's kind of process of trusting God and learning who he was a way for the for more people to do the same.
Yeah.
Like, oh,
yeah.
You know, we're going to stop. We're no longer going to be God's people hiding out in caves.
Right.
We're going to chase these guys down. I said in the sermon,
right.
This is one of those stories in the book of Judges. I called it like, this is like the Wild Wild West. There's a lot of violence, a lot of lawlessness, a lot of vigilante justice. The leaders of the other, you know, the Midianites and the other groups opposing them end up on, you know, poles. Again, not something we want to emulate, not like an excuse for violence. It's just like, that's just
It's funny how we happened. Don't. Funny how we don't take that away from the story. We do the fleece thing.
Right.
But like, no, to follow God's will, you cut off the heads of your enemies and put them on poles.
Like, not so much.
Yeah, right. not so much. And I've learned on that a couple times.
No, and then the end, you know, so the people say, okay, Gideon, we want you and your son, your grandson to be king. You're going to be our leader.
Yeah,
They don't say king, they say, you know, to rule over us.
Yeah.
And Gideon's like, no, I'm not going to, my son's not going to, but God is. God's going to rule over you. So like God comes back to the center of the story. So the way I ended the message at Melrose was like, that we don't have control over outcomes. You know, this is not what we're doing, but this is universally true. There's no situation or problem or challenge that we will face that isn't absolutely transformed by either a renewed trust in God,
a
renewed sense of who we are,
and
then letting God work on us in a process, because this whole story is about Gideon being worked on, not the Midianites, not the problem.
They got a sliver of the pie. He got the huge, big section of it.
And so why is it that God spends so much patient time working on someone like Gideon or someone like me with, you know, people with issues? This is how God has decided how to do this.
So really, this changes our conversations with each other and with God. Where we go and say, God, it's the Midianites. If you just give me a new boss, this marriage sucks.
Just change this situation. Yeah.
But what it should be is, God, I'm not trusting you. Mm-hmm. Just get honest with him and say, God, mm-hmm. I'm having a really hard time trusting you.
Right.
And be dead honest about it.
Right.
Or find a really trusted friend and saying, to just talk with them and say, I don't know where I stand with God these days.
Right.
Need to talk about it.
I need to talk this out.
Yeah.
And there's no shame in having, you know, we can think we have all the trust in the world and something changes in our lives tomorrow and we're going to struggle. There's no shame with that.
No.
But what do we do when we get there is what you're saying, right? Like we need to talk that through because we've got to get back to a place. That's the goal, to get out to a place where our actions and our words and our attitudes are in that place of trust. And when we're not there, then we know, you know, there's going to need to be a process to get us there.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if the motivation is for something else, fear, anxiety, worry, if that's what drives our lives, then there's no way for us to be able to move in God's direction.
We're hiding in caves. We're amassing these huge armies that we don't need
victims.
To amass.
Yeah. We're victims.
Yeah.
Rather than children of God. Or rather than, you know, as Paul says, we're more than conquerors through him who loved us.
Well, to get dead honest, as pastors,
we're
not supposed to have these problems.
Right.
And so for years, I would carry these and I would never admit to somebody, I'm really struggling with my trust to God. Because I wasn't supposed to do that.
You're a pastor, you never have that.
No. Yeah.
And the sermon, you know, you can preach this for other people.
Right.
Like, does it really sink in? Like, and one of the dangers of being a preacher is that you read all the commentaries, you know all the, you know, like, you get this almost as a head knowledge, and then you bring your own life experience in. But it's easy, in a way, to know the right answer. And every Sunday, you have to give the right answer.
Yeah.
And some days, you're just like everybody else, you don't feel that. Right?
Yeah.
But then that builds almost a hypocrisy if we're not careful.
Yeah.
We're talking it, but we're not living it.
Yeah.
And that's dangerous, isn't it?
Yeah.
Rather than saying, you know, I'm struggling.
Yeah.
In just the most basic ways to trust God.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
To pray.
Yeah.
To see where I fit in God's.
Honesty gets you an awful long way down the road.
Yeah.
Just to be honest. And you don't have to do your dirty laundry in front of everybody, but you find a friend or two you
right.
really trust.
Right. We all need that.
Yeah, and just
and
say.
You have that. I have
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
and
some, yeah, yeah.
Sometimes I have to say, okay, I haven't been real faithful in telling you what I'm struggling with. And this is, you know.
It's changed everything about my life.
And has mine too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, one thing that I struggle with, this is just sort of of interesting kind of moments, to be honest. Like after I preach a sermon, of course I preach most Sundays three times, so that's like emotionally exhausting. And I've learned, like, you know, being trying to be connected to people in any way on Sunday morning is just going to put you kind of out there, and that just wears me out. And then I'm a little bit of an introvert, a little bit of an extrovert, so I can do it. But so Sunday nights or Sunday afternoons on the way home from church after preaching about God's goodness and, you know, like watching people, hopefully respond to that or hear that and wanting so much for people to know that God loves them and cares for them. On the way home, I do a little gut check, like, okay, is this a day where I need to take a nap, or is this a day where I need to stay busy? Because the stay busy day is like, if I stop thinking too much, then like it gets kind of dark and a little, kind of gloomy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, this ironic thing, like, you know, like a lot of times the better the Sunday morning is, the more dark and gloomy the Sunday afternoon is.
Been there, done that.
And
yeah, it's rough.
And it's rough because we all struggle to like really, take this and hold it and feel it.
Yeah.
And sometimes we just don't feel
that
God is with us.
Ministers need to be ministered to.
Right. Well, and it's easy to say it's not all about a feeling. But there are times all of us don't feel it. We just don't feel it.
Yeah.
And it's ironic that Sunday afternoon is one of those times.
Yep.
Yeah. Also Monday mornings.
Yep.
You wake up and
you're
like, oh my gosh.
Been there, done that.
So, yeah. But I think I just snorted.
That's okay.
It was on camera.
People can go and rewind and watch it again if they want. Make a cute little meme out of it or GIF. I don't know how
whatever.
You say it. But anyway, we are so glad that you all joined us today for this version of Q&R.
You just never know.
As I mentioned earlier, we are going to look a little different this summer, as in we're going to be sort of doing this highlight and going deeper of the sermon series. This coming Wednesday, though, we will be at annual conference. So we're going to do like we did when we went to Q. We will check in at noon on Wednesday. It'll probably be short. I don't know who's going to be there. There's going to be tons of us in Covington. And so just know to check back in next Wednesday. It will look a little different. And then the Wednesday after that, we will be back here where we will be discussing...
The following week would be Hannah and Samuel.
And Samuel. So,
that's a good one.
We hope that you are having a great week. Thanks for tuning in with us, and we will see you right back here next Wednesday at noon. Bye.
High fives.